This is the Dan Proft Show.
I'm reliable, I'm a very good listener, and I'm extremely funny.
On the Salem Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show, and two of the leading lights of the left, one Eric Swalwell, Chaikam Mataharvi's boyfriend, and Ted Lieu, two Democrat Socialist representatives from California, who, again, were both House Impeachment 2.0 managers, so to my point about the leaders of the left. They suggested that Congress session being suspended yesterday, and if you may have noticed, the nation's capital being under something akin to martial law, that will persist until Republicans come around to agreeing with them about the 2020 election, because the failure to agree with them is tantamount to incitement to violence. It represents an existential threat to the republic. Don't believe me? Here's Ted Lieu.
And the Republican leaders can reduce the risk of further political violence by simply saying one simple, truthful sentence: the election was not stolen. The refusal to do that is why we need more Capitol Police officers, as Russell Henry has recommended, and why National Guard troops are still patrolling our Capitol today.
Mm-hmm. Eric Swalwell?
It aligns, Andrea, with warnings we've seen before the January 6th attack, post-January 6th. And I have to say, it angers me. It angers me that I have colleagues who have stood with some of these groups, who have perpetuated the lies that these groups have told around the election, and have done nothing to quell or to condemn these groups. And when that's the case, as Elizabeth Newman testified from the Homeland, formerly from the Homeland Security Committee, to the Homeland Security Committee a couple weeks ago, that when groups are not condemned, they feel emboldened. And the fact that I have colleagues that perpetuate this big lie about the election, that inspires these QAnon folks, and it makes them believe that they have a permissive operating environment, and that makes all of us less safe, and it affects our ability to do our job here.
Yeah, it's something. And again, these are the same individuals, 1,000 more Capitol Police officers to protect the political class. Meanwhile, these folks want to defund police where you live. No police for the hoi polloi outside the Beltway. More police for the political ruling class, just in case that wasn't clear. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined again by Conrad Black, publisher, financier, member of the British House of Lords. Conrad Black, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Glad to be back with you, Dan.
Is not agreeing with Swalwell and Lieu on what happened in the 2020 election, is that the greatest threat facing our representative republic in America?
I think that their attempt to blackmail the country, stifle the truth, and pretend that it was a pristine election is an existential threat to the republic as a free voting society. They are the threat. Part of the threat was the unforgettable spectacle of mysterious midnight drops of hundreds of thousands of votes, heavily lopsided in favor of the Democratic presidential candidate, with no possibility of verifying the accuracy or integrity of those votes by an exploitation of spuriously conceived amendments to, and frequently illegal amendments to, the voting procedure undertaken in the name of the public health crisis, the pandemic. I mean, the fact is, the Democrats probably stole the election, and in their vehemence at promulgating the theft of the election, they are stating that any failure to admit the absolute honesty of the election constitutes an armed insurrection against the regime that they've set up as a practical matter, an undemocratic state governed by them for as long as they want and any way they want. I think it is utterly scandalous and unbelievable. When President Trump spoke last Sunday in Orlando, thankfully, he avoided any hyperbole. He didn't claim to have won the popular vote. He didn't win the popular vote. Biden won the popular vote fair and square. But it is not at all clear that under the elections system that the United States has, where it isn't the popular vote that wins, it's a federation, and it is the amalgamation of electoral votes from the various states that wins the election. It's the 6 times in American history before last year the candidate who was elected did not lead the popular vote. That's the way the system works. It works that way in other countries. It's the way the system works. And And you know, if you win a lot of states by a narrow margin, and lose a few by a huge margin, that produces right. that result. And for these people to game the system, stuff the ballot boxes under a fraudulent procedure undertaken in the name of enabling people to vote during a pandemic, and then, I mean, that's one thing to steal an election, but then to try and suppress any discussion of it and claim that anyone who raises a peep of objection is a hooligan trying to overthrow the government by violent means. This has never happened in the United States before, and it must never happen again.
When we come back, I have one more question on this topic, and then I also want to get your take on what a post-Trump Republican Party will look like, or is it even a post-Trump Republican Party? More with Conrad Black, publisher, financier, member of the British House of Lords, right after this.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're speaking with Conrad Black, publisher, financier, member of the British House of Lords. And Conrad, before the break, we were talking about the accusations by Democrat socialists like Congressman Swalwell and Liu, Nancy Pelosi, that anything other than committing to rinse and repeat that the election was not stolen represents a threat to the Republic. Something else that they've done, too, you were talking about what's unprecedented in American history, to suggest that anybody who disagrees with that or raises legitimate questions about the administration of the election in particular states last year is somehow, an anti-democratic threat to a free society. Something else they've done, though, too. The state of D.C. right now, I haven't seen, artistic structure like this since Christo's Gates in Central Park. This is all a show in advance of what you were just describing.
Yeah, look, I probably owe you and your listeners an apology for haranguing you with a question, but it is just such an absolute outrage, and it is so inconceivable and unprecedented in a serious democratic country. We're moving on to this new thing, and may I add, it is just doubly annoying coming from this man Swalwell, the most unsuccessful candidate for presidential nomination in the history of the country, who stands up there bold as brass as an impeachment manager when they are accusing the former president of incitements he did not make, of an insurrection he did not wish or even imagine, in order to remove him from an office he did not hold, the most asinine, stupid legislative initiative in the history of the country, and this guy has been shagging the socks off a Chinese spy, and he's on the Intelligence Committee. You couldn't make it up.
No, you cannot make it up.
No Greek tragedian would produce a plot so incredible, so absurd. But it's not going to work. And as I say, I thought that when the president, former president, laid it out last Sunday, he made his case in a way that is the beginning of the collapse of the entire Democratic narrative. You put it out in your preamble to our previous session, and it won't fly. I mean, the fact is, half the people realize and believe that there was something funny about the election. Like, I have to add, if I may, one point. I think part of the problem is the Supreme Court not hearing the Texas Attorney General's case. I mean, it was a direct case to the Supreme Court because it was one state supported by 16 other states suing several of the swing states on the grounds of failure to exercise their constitutional responsibility to assure a fair election result. So it wasn't an appeal. It was a state against other states, therefore it had to start at the Supreme Court. They had to hear the case, and they didn't. They abdicated, presumably. Now, I'm no psychiatrist. I can't mind read, but presumably because they were afraid of such a political hot potato. But that's not what the Supreme Court's in business for. They have to hear what they have to hear, and they have no higher duty than to adjudicate presidential elections when called to do it. And they, in abdicating, they essentially abdicated the role of the judiciary as a co-equal branch of government. I'm not saying how they should have determined that. They should have determined it on the basis of the adduced facts, but they should have heard the case.
You mentioned Trump's speech at CPAC last Sunday evening, and I wanted to get your review of the roadmap that he laid out effectively. Dan Henninger wrote about this in the Journal, too. Much of it was very Reagan-esque, as much of his policy agenda was very Reagan-esque. It just was sort of subordinated to, you know, his personality and rhetorical flourish and tweets and such. But did he lay out a roadmap that would provide, if followed, would provide Republicans with majorities and control of the federal government for a generation?
Well, I don't know about a generation, but I think that party is headed to victory next year, and I think in 2024 the Republican nominee will, assuming his health holds. And he certainly looked pretty robust on Sunday. Quite a contrast, I may say, with the incumbent president. But if his health is good, he will either be the nominee or the nominee will be somebody approved by him. There was no doubt at the end of that address on Sunday that it's the president's party, the Republicans. These people had the fairy tale that Trump was just some meteor that came across the sky and he's gone. That's nonsense. That party supports him and the right to support him.
Which do you think is the more judicious path for Trump as kingmaker and, you know, tapping somebody like Ron DeSantis to carry the mantle forward in 24, or if he's up for the challenge physically, as you suggest, him doing it himself?
I think it depends on how he plays his cards in the meantime. If he continues like he did on Sunday, where he sticks to the facts, doesn't insult his opponents gratuitously, doesn't ramble around in an undisciplined way in what he says, and raises the points he did, you know, the southern border, some of the excesses of the environmental terrorists, how to deal with China and so on, sticks to the issues, deals with them responsibly, and acts like a president, and doesn't demean the office by aspiring to it in a way that is worrisome as to whether he'll conduct it in a dignified way. then I think he, if he wants the job, he should go for it. If he's been the president, he was a good president, but if he says, well, look, this is how I've done it up to now, I'm not changing, then I think it would be better to get a more unifying candidate. I mean, we saw last year his policies were ratified in the congressional and state elections, but a majority of Americans would take even Biden, who is not a galvanizing figure. He has his likable aspects, but he's not a galvanizing figure. But Trump was just too exhausting for the country. He was in their face every day and all night on Twitter. And if he makes that turn to a more statesmanlike and calm approach to the office, seeking the office and holding the office, he should do it himself if he wants it. If not, he should get it all set up and decide who he thinks should be president and support that person.
He is Conrad Black, publisher, financier, member of the British House of Lords. Conrad Black, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Dan.
Listen to podcast of the show at danproftshow.com.